Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. Michelle Chiquelis didn't set out to become an entrepreneur. What started out as a baking hobby became a company, Michelle's Granola, which is made from scratch in Timonium and distributed in stores like Whole Foods and Wegmans throughout the Mid-Atlantic. Though the company grew organically, Michelle talked a little bit about getting it off the ground and knowing when to continue. Michelle's Granola emphasizes simple ingredients, and I talked with Michelle about trendiness and whether consumer interest in healthy and organic foods is just a passing fad. Michelle also talked a little bit about how the local food entrepreneur scene has changed in the past decade, going from asking for money to donating it, and how granola became her go-to. Here's our conversation. So what is Michelle's Granola?
Michelle's Granola is a Baltimore-based small batch granola bakery, and our work is to hand make and hand package a full line of granola cereals, which we distribute to grocery stores. Our customer base is throughout the Mid-Atlantic region. I got the business started just outside of D.C. and moved to Baltimore not long after. So our reach is primarily throughout the Mid-Atlantic, but we're also starting to expand our wings and distribute up to the Northeast and Southwest parts of the country as well.
And when did you start the business?
I got it started in 2006 at a farmer's market in the D.C. area, at a farmer's market in Northern Virginia. It was the Courthouse Farmer's Market in Arlington, Virginia. That was the first place that Michelle's Granola was ever sold. I had been making granola as a home kitchen hobby for a couple of years. It was just my food obsession. I loved cooking and baking from scratch and had become really interested in the natural and organic foods movement. And that's how I found myself out at the local farmer's market selling granola. And it just took off from there. It's been growing steadily ever since over the last 11 years.
What made you want to do something more with it than just a hobby?
A friend of mine pushed me. She said, Michelle, you know, this is really good granola. Maybe you should think about selling it. And I didn't have any entrepreneurial aspirations. I never thought that I was going to be a business owner. In fact, I was working as a fundraiser for a nonprofit organization in D.C. at the time. But I had a job that didn't require more than my 9-to-5. And so I had some free space to think about things and practice hobbies. And I feel I have less and less of that these days. But she said, you should get out there and sell it. And so I actually called my farmer's market and said, I make granola. I'd like to come sell it. And what I had in mind was setting up a card table and my friend bringing out his guitar, and we'd just sling granola on the weekends. And they actually told me they had a long waiting list of farmers that were waiting to get into the market and that I needed to be a legitimate licensed food operation to come out to the market. So I had to put it on the back burner for a little while, but then I got more and more interested in farmers markets and what they were doing in our communities, and ended up getting a job through Craigslist working for another bakery at the market, and they didn't make granola and customers asked for it all the time. And so I began making granola for them and selling it at their stand, and that's how it got started.
So were you doing this Craigslist job when you were still working at the nonprofit?
I was, yes. I juggled a lot of different jobs simultaneously for the first few years of owning a business.
And what kind of nonprofit was it?
It was a international peace and conflict resolution organization. Its presence in D.C. was very small. It was called Initiatives of Change, but it was part of a larger global network. And it was essentially a movement of change makers, people who wanted to engage in conversation and build bridges across divides. So they would focus on racial issues here in the United States and more issues of interreligious conflicts abroad. And I worked for them as a fundraiser and a grant writer.
How long were you there?
3 years.
Were you creatively satisfied? Did you like that job?
I loved the community aspect of that job. And I wanted to do something with my life that I felt was meaningful. So this was my first true professional experience that gave me that opportunity. But the career itself wasn't really going anywhere. So I knew that there was going to be an end to it. And I think once I got involved in the food scene and the food business, I knew that that's the direction that I wanted to go in.
Have you always been passionate about food? And how long have you baked and taken up these hobbies?
I think I have always loved food. But my experience of food has changed a lot over the last, 35 years. All my memories of growing up are around food. I'm sure I'm not alone in that. So family gatherings, and my grandma used to make this huge pot of chicken curry that had this bazillion toppings that we would all share and come together around. And traditions of food have always been really strong in my life. But I think it was in my early 20s after I left college that I got really more interested in understanding how what I eat makes me feel. And I began shopping more for natural and organic foods. Cooking and baking, though, has always been a big part of my life. So growing up, I was the one in the kitchen kind of making the cakes for the family gatherings. And I've just always been into recipes and cookbooks and making things and seeing people smile when they eat them.
Did you have a favorite recipe or a go-to when you were younger?
Granola is the first thing I can remember being my go-to thing. Prior to that, I was just experimenting across the board. My pantry at home growing up was always full of healthy foods, but I do remember that my mom didn't like spending a lot of time in the kitchen. So the meals that we had as a family were more quick, you know, three ingredient things. 80% of it probably had cream of mushroom soup in it. And so I was, you know, interested in scratch baking. So I would be the one who would actually make the cake from scratch rather than from a box mix.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Potomac, Maryland, which is in Montgomery County. And my father is a dentist. He had a dental practice there, and that's actually where my parents met. It's a wonderful suburb of D.C. It was very quaint. I remember the road past our house led to the country. So at the time, it was one of the more outermost suburbs of D.C. I walked to school, rode my bike around the neighborhood. My parents could walk to work when it snowed really heavily, so everything was kind of in close quarters.
How else would you describe your family life and your parents? You know, you mentioned the healthy foods. Was there anything else that they were into that sticks out to you?
We were always very active growing up. My parents played softball on a community team together, and they were business owners. So my dad's a dentist, and my mom managed his business. And so they were entrepreneurs in their own right. They had their own little practice. And I think one of the impressions that that made on me as a little girl was just the flexibility and the freedom that they had to kind of have their own schedule and run their days the way that they wanted to run their days. My mom was home for us every day when we came home from school. So they scheduled their practice so that her work could be done by three, so that she'd be there to make sure that we had the pencil to the paper and we were doing our homework every night. I don't have a big family. I have a pretty small family, but we were all close by. We were lucky to have my grandparents just a couple miles down the road.
Do you remember what you wanted to be when you grew up?
No. I did not dream of being anything when I grew up. I was a dancer. So I love to dance. And I think I remember as a youngster looking at ballerinas and watching them on stage and, you know, watching the Rockettes. But I never really had a clear vision for what I wanted to be. You know, my dad always said to me, I just want you to be a productive member of society. That was like his parameters. And they focused very much on our education and making sure that we were doing our part and doing the very best that we could every day in school. I went to university. I got my bachelor's in science and economics at Duke University, which is also where my mom went. And I just was very focused on education and learning as much as I could, but I didn't really have a vision for my career, and I didn't even after I graduated from college.
So you studied economics, but you said you didn't have this entrepreneurial side yet?
Business seemed like a good thing to study if you didn't really know what you wanted to do. It wasn't that specific. It could be, you know, broad. And where I went to school didn't have a business major. It was economics. And I was very good at math. So that it made sense for me. And it actually has given me a lot of tools that have been so helpful to having my own business now.
What were you doing before your most recent job at the nonprofit?
So before that job, I took my very first job out of college was sales at a technology company. So I graduated in 2000, and the tech boom was well underway. And I worked in sales for a year, and I just wasn't great at sales, which was also good for me to realize in a professional capacity before I got my own business started. And then I took a few years off and I traveled. I went abroad, traveled over to Ireland and met some friends there. And from there, we went throughout Asia and to Australia. And so I spent a couple of years just traveling and being free.
How did your travels inform you?
I think it's just the experience of, breaking out of your comfort zone and viewing things from a different perspective. It's not a really complex analysis of what the experience was. But I think just very simply, it caused me to look at, you know, where I grew up and how I grew up and what my experiences were versus what different experiences people have all over the world, and how we're all speaking the same language, really, essentially, at the end of the day. And I think that's a good experience for anybody to have.
So you mentioned that you obviously liked baking it and it became your first go-to, but why granola? Like, why do you think that was the thing that stuck and ended up becoming this whole business?
Well, it's a natural and organic food staple, I think. So when I got more into natural and organic foods, I naturally was drawn to granola. But I actually have really good memories of Quaker granola cereal growing up. That was one of my favorite cereals to eat just with cold milk. I was living on Martha's Vineyard for a summer. I was waiting tables and saving up some money for my travels. And there was a local bakery there called Black Dog, I'm sure. Lots of people have heard of it. They have t-shirts all over the place. And they made fresh baked granola bars. And really, the experience of a scratch bakery wasn't something that I had come across very often. They existed in the areas where I grew up, but they had all kind of shut down. So this was a scratch bakery, and I would go there every morning, and it was a fresh baked granola bar. And I really just fell in love with that. And so when I came home, I started trying to replicate that experience and just began making granola. And mine's a loose cereal, but it had all those same fresh qualities to it.
Have you always been able to experiment in the kitchen like that, or were you more of a strict recipe follower?
Oh, I love experimenting in the kitchen. So actually, our granola, I had one recipe that I was making all of the time, and now we have seven different flavors that we make regularly that are all just kind of riffs off of that original recipe.
So describe to me the transition from doing this at farmers markets to scaling a large business.
Honestly, it just sort of happened organically. I was selling at a market, and I was meeting other vendors who had businesses for a lot longer than I did. And they'd all sort of been through the experience of, you're a local producer, right? You're really passionate about what you're making. But how do you get that to the consumer in a way that actually affords you a living? And so I was surrounding myself with other vendors at the market who were there to give me advice on whether or not to stay direct to consumer or to break into the wholesale market. They were there to give me advice on how to price my products and also how to scale my business. But I, knowing that I didn't have an intention to be an entrepreneur, to have a business, that I think helped me just follow the business's lead and the lead of what customers were asking for in the community at that time. So I was selling granola, and after a year or so, I think my first wholesale account came to the market. They were scouting for local foods because farmers markets were becoming more competition, bigger competition for grocery stores in the area. And they said, we want to carry your granola in our bulk bins. Would you consider selling it to us? And the meat farmer next to me, I saw that his sausages were in their refrigerator case. So I asked him what the experience was like and how he priced his products. And he said, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for you. And so that's how it got started. And then I expanded into a second co-op and then a farm stand that I had worked at right out of college briefly for a few months. They ended up selling my products at their stands. And then I looked into getting my own commercial kitchen. And that's what brought me to Baltimore.
Why Baltimore?
Baltimore has affordable commercial real estate. That's really what brought me here. I started looking for my own commercial kitchen space in DC. And I honestly think if I had stayed down there, I would have never gotten Michelle's Granola off the ground. I just wouldn't have been able to pay the bills. And that's hard enough early on in a business's life. I, again, went on Craigslist, where so much of my life started, and found a commercial kitchen space in South Baltimore in Curtis Bay. And it belonged to a family who had operated Little Maria's Pizzeria on Pennington Avenue for many, many years. And the father and his brother decided they didn't want to operate the pizza shop anymore, but they owned the building. And their son, thankfully, saw it as an opportunity for a caterer or for a small local food producer because it was a fully built out commercial kitchen. So I lucked into that opportunity and got the business really off the ground there because I finally had my own space 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to make granola and distribute out of.
Is there anything that is unique to Baltimore or to Maryland about owning a business in your estimation?
Well, I've never owned a business anywhere else, but my experience of Baltimore has been that it's a really vibrant community of creative people who with a very entrepreneurial spirit. And so when I first came up here, I was actually doing a farmer's market at Goucher College. And at that market, I met Thomas of Zeke's and Joan of Norman of One Straw Farm. And they turned to me when I was setting up my tent and they said, welcome to Baltimore. And that wasn't the typical experience where I was from. There was just a little bit more competition in the local food scene. And Baltimore was just newer and fresher and open to new ideas and new businesses. And so I felt that immediate. I felt that energy immediately when I came here. And it's been really supportive of my company the whole way along. Maryland itself, I think of it more from like a strategic standpoint. This location could not be better. I'm always so grateful. I was from Maryland. It's just such a heavily populated area. And there are literally almost a dozen and a half Whole Foods stores within driving distance of where I set down roots for our first commercial kitchen. That's lucky. You know, if I was in the middle of Kansas where my husband's family is from, I wouldn't have had the opportunities that I have to grow a business. So the strategic, you know, the location of it couldn't be better.
Is there anything you lose when a passion project becomes your livelihood?
Being an entrepreneur takes everything. It takes so much energy and it does consume you in a way. I always have viewed that as a positive thing, but the reality is that you can't do everything. And I don't turn it off. And you often hear, how many hours do you work a week? And I don't think about it in terms of hours just because I'm not clocking in and out. I think it's kind of always with me and it's a 7 day a week project. But I've been able to live out my personal passions through my business, which has been really, really rewarding. So Michelle's Granola is more than just Michelle's Granola. It's a lot of the values that I hold very dear to me as a person that I've been able to live out through a business and see affect my community of employees and our broader community in a positive way.
When you started to, I know you said it happened in a very organic way, but when you started kind of seeing that the business was really taking off and this was going somewhere, what was your goal at that time? Even if it wasn't a specific number or whatever it may be, like when things start getting successful, what does your new mission become?
That's a great question, and it changes all the time. I know that I sound really kind of relaxed about it. It just happened. And obviously, it didn't happen that way. I think that, though I do reflect on the fact that I never really wanted this to happen, but I always did have a solid vision for what success meant to me. And early on, it was just being able to pay the bills. So for the first 5 years, you're paying the minimum on the credit cards and just putting one foot in front of the other. And that was the reality of it, and that was hard. Every time we got an order from Whole Foods, I would cheer and then I would say, oh no, I got to make all this granola, you know? So just it's like so instantaneous, the feeling of having your own business. The highs and the lows are so tangible. And you just kind of want to, I think that my short-term goal was always just like finding that good middle point, or we would call it the sweet spot of where things were just working. You know, it was easy to do business. The bills were getting paid on time. So you're always kind of working towards that sweet spot, but at the same time, you're always motivated to grow because, you know, as a business owner, if you're not growing, you're dying. So you always want to keep innovating and pushing things forward. And fortunately, we've been able to do that. I think I started my business at just the right time when consumers were becoming increasingly aware of, once again, where their food came from and how their purchasing decisions can really create the positive world that they want to live in each day. And so we've kind of ridden that wave. And now after 10 years, I think that we are a staple in people's pantries and our brand recognition is strong enough that hopefully we can continue.
Was there ever a fear that the move toward, you know, knowing where your food comes from, more organic and local products, was there ever a fear that that was just a passing trend? And I mean, it has been 10 years now, but do you think it could be quote unquote trendy?
I think that it is trendy. I think it's not something that everybody thinks about when they're eating. I think that I'm very fortunate to not only think about what I'm going to eat, but when I'm going to eat it and where it came from. So it's trendy in that it is popular, right? People are into this idea. It makes them feel good. They're happy to be part of this community. But I don't think it's trendy in that it's going to go away. I think that actually it's gaining more and more traction and more people are becoming conscious consumers. And that also the availability of these products is growing. So it was trendy when Whole Foods opened and they were really changing. They changed the entire grocery scene because consumers were interested in natural and organics. But now we're seeing more conventional grocery carrying these products on their shelves. And so I think it's becoming more mainstream. And I don't think that there's another direction that we can go in.
When you started the business, did the entrepreneurial side come naturally to you? And what were the parts of the job that were easiest and hardest for you?
Well, I knew I wasn't great at sales. So right away, I brought in my first employee is a salesperson. He's still the sales manager at Michelle's Granola. And Tony's great at sales. So he's really good at connecting with people, introducing the product. He wants to talk about the product all day long. So I knew right away I wasn't great at that. What did come naturally to me was quality control, thinking about the product. I think I have like a perfectionist nature to me. I always want to do the best, have the product be the best. So that came naturally to me. And then also focusing on operations and business management, whether that was skills that I learned through my education or just something that was part of who I am. I've always really enjoyed learning how to run a business and just striving to make sure that we're meeting our bottom line and that the business can continue and that it's sustainable in every possible way. The other thing that gets me really excited is the way that we run our business, our focus on sustainability, and that was something from day one. So we've always been really committed to not only having a negative impact, but trying to give back in every way that we can. We ran our first delivery truck on recycled vegetable oil, which was as much out of financial necessity as it was out of a want to do good. We buy wind credits now so that we run on wind power. And we've done everything kind of slowly as we can, but always with this overarching goal to have the most positive impact that we can. And one of the things that we're most excited about right now is our charitable giving program. So we've committed 1% of our sales back to local food projects, other food entrepreneurs in the community that are helping to increase the availability of local foods, distribute them, and provide nutrition education.
You mentioned when you were working at the nonprofit, you know, you wanted to do something that made a difference in the world and you were doing good for others. Obviously, Michelle's Granola's efforts are aimed at that. But did you ever like worry about losing that when you went in the entrepreneurial direction away from, you know, nonprofit life?
So there was a year between when I was fundraising and when Michelle's Granola really got off the ground. And I think I referred to those early years where you're kind of just doing a lot of everything to make ends meet. But what actually the transition point was I was working at the farmers market alongside the baking company that helped me get my start. And the owners of that company, John and Louise, they weren't just bakery owners. They were really interested in what was happening in the local agriculture scene, very passionate, community-minded people. And so my time at the market was really just spent talking to them about ideas and how we can improve our community and improve the market community. And through the course of those conversations and the people that I met at the farmers market, a grant writing opportunity came up through the Project for Public Spaces and the Kellogg Foundation. And they had partnered together to help create positive community spaces throughout the United States, vibrant community spaces where people could come together. And one of the things that I had noticed working at the farmers market was this particular market was in a very diverse neighborhood. There was a heavy Latino immigrant population, and those consumers were not present at the farmers market. And I started asking myself, why? Is it because of the location of the market? Is it because of the products that were available at the market? And so that question, asking myself that question and noticing that this part of the community wasn't part of this market that all I thought about was how fantastic it was and all the amazing things that it was doing for the community. So that and the grant writing opportunity came up at the same time. So I wrote a grant and received the grant, and the grant allowed me to open an auxiliary farmers market in Langley Park, which is more at the center of the immigrant community, and to engage farmers and other local entrepreneurs who were providing products that were more focused on that community's diet and interests. So we got that market off the ground. And one of the best parts about that market was that it actually provided funding so that we could create a dollar-for-dollar matching program, which now exists more widely. And this allowed us to match food stamp and WIC, Women, Infant, and Children, and Farmers Market Nutrition Program benefits for those recipients, match those dollar for dollar. So it was creating a larger budget for consumers to shop at local markets and also creating another opportunity for local farmers to come and sell their goods. So that was a part-time job. And then I expanded Michelle's Granola part-time. So when I decided to go forward with Michelle's Granola, and I actually left that market management position to somebody else, and that market is still going. It'll be in its 11th season this year. I think I knew that I could use the power of my business to create positive social change. My business just was not yet powerful enough. So my goal became making my business successful so that I could be creating positive social change through business. And I noticed that a lot as a fundraiser. I was always asking for money. And when you're asking for money, you sometimes want to be on the other side. So I think that was my motivation. I knew that having a business wasn't actually going to make me sacrifice wanting to do good work and being a positive contributor.
Was there ever a time that the business didn't seem viable or that you doubted yourself?
I try not to, but yes, there were times when I just didn't think it was going to make financial sense to move forward with the business. But I also was very optimistic that it would work. And I think what has helped keep me optimistic is the fact that our products sell. So we see the movement of our products is very strong. We have a lot of support from a strong base of retail partners in the Mid-Atlantic. Their consumer base is growing. They're opening more stores. So all signs are pointing in a positive direction. But there were times when I was just really tired and unsure if I had the skills that are really needed to take a food business larger. And you also see examples or models of other food businesses that have started in a stronger place and have grown a lot more quickly. And you wonder if by doing things differently, growing more slowly and steadily over a longer period of time, that you're going to fall behind and get overlooked or outpaced. But actually what I've learned is that there's room for all of us in this business, and there's lots of different approaches to having a successful business, whether it's in the food sector or not. And I really like the way that we've grown, which is sort of just learning by doing and just always being accountable to our customers, producing the highest quality product and just doing things in the very best way that we know how.
Yeah, as someone who doesn't know anything about owning a business, I've always been curious about those times of doubt or uncertainty. How do you know that you should continue on? Is it just blind faith? Is it seeing the sales, like you said? Or how do you balance? What's the tipping point, essentially?
You have to constantly be asking yourself if what you're doing is worthwhile, you know, and I think that sometimes entrepreneurs are thinking if it's worthwhile for themselves, and they might move forward in a direction that isn't necessarily responding to what's going on around them. And that can be tricky because it is all about you. It's your business, and you're the only one at the end of the day who has this responsibility to move things forward. So I think just finding a good balance between what you want to do, you know, your own personal passions, your commitment. Sometimes you're so committed to a product and making it work that you don't see some of the signs that are around you that might either be guiding you in a positive direction or encouraging you to pivot. So I think it is just kind of always thinking and asking yourself, is this the right thing to do? Is this the right way to go? But you also, we all have self-doubt about things. And that's got to be one of the biggest crippling factors in life, self-doubt and fear. So I try to stay focused on the positive and just really say, this is what I've committed to. You got to see it through. And there's no other way around it. If I waver, if I'm uncertain about my decisions, if I try to pull back, I probably would make a mistake or head in the wrong direction, or maybe I would have given up 5 years ago. So I think just trying not to listen to the self-doubt and surrounding yourself with positive people who believe in you, who've had similar experiences, but just know how to kind of support you and keep you moving in the right direction. I think that's really important.
On that note, have you had mentors, or who has guided you in this path?
I have had mentors throughout the years. A couple of local food entrepreneurs who have really inspired me are Andy Berger and his wife, Jen, who started Be More Organic, and Pete Truby of Salazon Chocolate. So these are two business owners that I've met pretty early on, and we started a peer mentor group together, just where we would talk about issues that we were having in our business and also support each other and provide positive encouragement. What I really admire about those two businesses is that their missions and their products are so inextricably linked. You can't even tell the difference between their purpose in life and why they have those companies and the products that they sell. And I really admire that. So Andy and his wife, Jen, are really focused on, they have a charity called Jody's Climb Time for Hope that provides funding for MS and breast cancer research, which are two causes very close to their hearts and their families. And Pete is very focused on environmental causes. So he introduced me to 1% for the Planet, which is the model that we've based our charitable giving program, Give One for Good Food, on. And I remember sitting down for a meeting with him with the Appalachian Trail Foundation early on, and we were going to do a collaboration, a chocolate granola bar that never took off. But we met with this foundation, and I got to witness Pete's passion for giving back to his community in a very real way. So those two have been guiding lights to me locally. And beyond that, I'm inspired by food entrepreneurs who are just doing things differently in general. And there are two women in the restaurant business that stand out to me. Nora Puyan, who owns Restaurant Nora in DC, which is the first certified organic restaurant in the country. And Alice Waters, who owns Chez Panisse in Berkeley, California. And she started that restaurant in the 70s. And her whole mission is to source local and organic for her restaurants. And she's gone on from there. That's a very powerful mission in and of itself, but has started a program called Edible Schoolyard to help kids learn where their food comes from and eat more healthfully. So locally and nationally, there are definitely people that I look up to.
In the past 10 years, how have you seen the local business climate and food scenes change?
Well, the space of producers is definitely much more crowded. When I started, and it was only 10 years ago, but it feels like a lifetime ago in terms of what the scene looked like, you couldn't find commercial kitchen space. And that was one of the biggest barriers to entry and why I think I may have succeeded where others failed. Now there are these incubator kitchen projects that have cropped up all over. A few are opening in Baltimore. There's a few very successful ones that have been open for several years in DC, and there are hundreds of local producers. My memory of when I approached Whole Foods was that I was one of the only local producers in the grocery section. So outside of the produce aisle, but down the center aisles of the store where all the dry goods are. And I remember thinking for years, why aren't there more local products in here? And Michelle's Granola is still very active at the farmers markets, and I would see lots of great products who never moved past their farmers market stand and their direct to consumer business into wholesale. But I saw lots of opportunities for them. Now more and more vendors are taking those opportunities. So the space is much more crowded. There's a couple of local granola companies that we're very happy to have part of the scene with us. But also there's just a huge variety of things available locally that weren't available at all 10 years ago. And it's great to see the way that these companies are engaging with the local agriculture scene as well and sourcing their ingredients locally and then getting them to market.
Do you ever get sick of granola?
Yeah. I eat a lot of granola.
I would imagine.
Sometimes I remark on the fact that, you know, if somebody had told me how many times I'd say the word granola in my life, at the bank, they thought my name was Michelle Granola. I would go in and they'd say, "What can we help you with today, Mrs. Granola?" And, you know, at that time in the earlier years, we were talking earlier about what do you give up when you have your own business? And sometimes you are just, it is entirely you. And when they started calling me Mrs. Granola, I was like, I have to take a step back.
Yeah.
I even forget what your question was.
If you ever get sick of it.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I like to sometimes, I eat it every single day. It just tastes different depending on the context. So when you're in the production facility and you're tasting something for quality control, it tastes a lot different than when you're at home with your kids and you're just having breakfast together. So I like to make sure that I'm eating our granola outside of work so that I have the experience that our customers have. And that's always really reassuring to me. So that's granola and the times that people are experiencing it that's not like work related or in the heat of the kitchen.
What's your next goal or benchmark for success?
So right now I'm really focused on our Give One for Good Food program. Michelle's Granola is in its 11th year now. We moved into a new production space about 2 years ago. We have a huge capacity to expand there. I have a wonderful management team who are really focused on the day-to-day operations of Michelle's Granola. I'm still our operations manager, but my day-to-day responsibilities aren't as intense as they were in the formative years of the business. So now I'm taking a step back and thinking about how Michelle's Granola can continue to grow in a positive way, and really how we can use the power of business to affect positive social change. So about 3 years ago, we started giving 1% of our sales to local food projects, and we have seen that really have a fantastic impact. So we've been focused on urban farms, projects like White Lock Community Farm that are growing produce locally and distributing it locally, nutrition education programs like TasteWise Kids. And so we've been able to actually provide financial support for those programs. And what I am seeing is a disconnect between these organizations and their ability to spend time on fundraising and the money that businesses have to give and should be giving back into their communities. And so I'm interested in growing Give One for Good Food into a larger network of businesses who are civic-minded and who want to give back in a very meaningful way to the communities in which they live and work.
Michelle, thanks so much for speaking today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Michelle Chiquelis. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast. You can find Female Trouble every Tuesday on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We're also on Twitter at FMLTrouble and online at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble, where you can find more info in the show notes. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.